Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Dave's Garden e-newsletter, the Triangle Gardener magazine, the state-by-state gardening e-newsletter, and maybe from Jerry Baker's terrific garden tonics. We'll start with Dave's Garden e-newsletter. A good gardener always plants three seeds. One for the bugs, one for the weather, and one for himself. That was said by Leo Aikman. Harvesting and Using Elderberries by Melody Rose. I remember as a child, summertime was the time that we all packed up in the car and headed out to pick blackberries or muscadines. We'd spend the day filling our buckets and our stomachs with wonderful sweet goodness. We'd then head home where Mom would make jelly and jam or simply wash and freeze our harvest. It seems that in this world of 60-hour work weeks and takeout food, some of our simpler pleasures have been forgotten. Very few children, or adults for that matter, know the pure joy of popping a sun-warmed berry in their mouth while standing surrounded by bushes full of vine-ripened bounty. I can wistfully recall those times, and each summer the roadsides and fields beckon me. My daily errands take me down a stretch of four-lane highway on a regular basis, and I couldn't help but notice the beautiful white umbels of elderberries as the flowers bloomed in late spring. Their big, fat, flat blooms nodded over the right-of-way fence like beach umbrellas at a fancy resort. I admired them as I headed about my business and thought to myself that the birds would have a real feast come August. As summer stretched on and the long, hot, humid days became even longer and hotter, I forgot about the lovely, cheerful blooms that greeted me as I drove about my business. I had succumbed to the rat race and buried my instincts inside the ever-present need to deal with modern life, which consisted of job, mortgage, taxes, and the daily necessities of what it takes to stay afloat in today's society. Oh, but then came August, sweltering hot, and humidity that ran down one's back in small rivers, dashing from one air-conditioned building to another, and barely daring to take a breath in the oven that summer had become. My air-conditioned car was a haven between errands, until I caught sight of that unmistakable glossy blackness that could only be one thing. The elderberries were ripe! They hung in weighty masses over the fence along the four-lane and taunted me. For 3 days, I drove down that stretch of road and longingly looked at the heavy heads of berries. I did not need them. We do not even eat jelly as a rule. I did not have time to fool with them, but there they were. They were calling my name, and not just a little nagging buzz like a mosquito would make. No. These were screaming for me to rescue them from the roadside. Come get us, please. We want to be something besides bird food. On the fourth morning, they had me. I could resist no longer. Gathering up a couple of 5-gallon buckets, my garden shears, and actually putting on heavy shoes suitable for stepping where no one could not see, made it final. The elderberries were coming home. I headed out to the right-of-way and started snipping them into my buckets, one big glossy head at a time. In no time, I'd filled my buckets to overflowing, much to the amusement of my neighbors and the curiosity of one county deputy. They all know me by now anyway, and one more odd task didn't seem to surprise anyone. The birds did not go hungry either. I left even more berries than I took. Back to my kitchen I went with my bounty and started the task of preparing the berries for jelly. I pulled the tiny, seedy globes from the stems and put them in my biggest stock pot with a little water to keep them from sticking. Simmering on low to release the juices took about 40 minutes. I strained the juice from the pulp, and the juice was so dark that light barely came through it. I knew better, but I had to sample the raw juice. Elderberry juice is not exactly fit for consumption in its raw state. It has a slightly insipid, sour taste that is best combined with sugar or other juices to bring out its full potential. I made jelly with my harvest, adding the juice of a couple of lemons to boost the pectin content. The result was a beautiful, rich, dark purple jelly with a unique flavor. I ended up giving most of it away, just as I predicted, but the ghosts of my ancestors were looking with approval over my shoulder the whole time I worked on it. As with all wild foods, please verify exactly what you harvest. Be aware that pesticides and poisons may have been used nearby. Also, do not trespass on private property, and always ask permission before you pick. And now from the state-by-state gardening website. 7 Seeds for a Prolific Garden by Nan K. Chase. Not all seeds are created equal. I've been vegetable gardening for a few decades now and have discovered that some vegetable seeds produce big results for a small investment year after year. No longer do I want to experiment with lots of new crops. What I like instead is to plant seeds that give me the least hassle and the biggest rewards at pennies per serving. My favorite value seeds can all take a beating from the weather, be it hot, cold, wet, or dry. They can sometimes thrive in soil that looks too thin to support life, and when grown in a sensible rotation, they can produce over much of the year, not just in midsummer. Here are a baker's half dozen of my favorite value seeds. 1. Kale. This has got to be absolutely the best value for your seed dollar. A packet of kale seeds grows into a crop that provides nutritious eating for a whole year. Red kale, blue kale, black kale, it does not matter. Although I have found Russian red kale to be the most reliable of all. Plant the seeds in early spring rather than planting mine in rows. I like to broadcast seeds quite densely in an oval area about the size of 2 bushel baskets side by side. I stagger plantings by a week or two over a month so the harvest runs longer. Start harvesting the smallest thinnings when they are 1 inch tall and use them to top soups or salads. Continue thinning the plants as they grow, using the young shoots in vegetable dishes. The remaining plants then have room to grow and will keep pumping out fresh leaves all season. 2. Scallions. I hate reading stories about food poisoning outbreaks involving factory farm scallions because it gives this vegetable a bad reputation, and scallions add so much zest to cooking. When I grow my own scallions, otherwise known as spring onions, I know that they have never touched the kinds of contaminants that can sicken or kill. Whenever I see onion sets, dry bulblets, available at my local farm store, I buy a pound or two and plant them 1 to 2 dozen at a time, about every 2 weeks during the spring and into the early summer. You can also plant them again starting in mid-autumn and keep planting until the ground freezes hard. This planting schedule gives me easy-to-find clusters of spring onions for much of the year. 3. Leeks. Considering how much leeks cost at the store or farmer's market, and considering how cheap and reliable the seed is, it's a wonder more people don't try growing this gourmet member of the onion family. I have tried growing leeks from seed both in the ground and individually in peat pots, and I recommend the peat pot method. You can start one seed in each pot around March. They sprout quickly and can be transplanted when the seedlings are as slender as a pencil lead. They hang out in the garden all summer and can look stressed, but when cold, wet weather returns, watch out. Leeks love the cold, and they grow tender and plump for winter harvest. To plant by seed, sow them thickly, and when a clump emerges, dig it up and separate the seedlings for transplant. 4. Green beans. While you can find these staples of the vegetable garden in colors including purple and yellow, let's just call them green beans for ease of identification. They are steady performers in any condition. And the beans supply months of harvest if you make sure to plant lots of different kinds. Climbing, half-runner bush in small batches every 2 weeks from early June through mid-July. One major difference between bush beans and the runner or climbing types is that bush beans tend to flower at once and then produce the bulk of their crop at pretty much the same time. The other kinds will produce fewer beans at once, but over a longer period of time. Whatever you do, pick the beans before they get too large and tough. Remember, slender and tender. 5. Sunflowers. A single seed of the giant mammoth Russian can produce pounds of edible sunflower seeds at the end of summer. As an added bonus, the vibrous stalk can be recycled in the compost pile, and the big root ball will have conditioned your worst soil. Talk about value. Annual sunflowers really do love the sun and the hot, dry conditions in the summer garden. Be sure not to plant the seeds too closely together, as the stalks need good air circulation to develop the strength to hold up that big head. Perennial sunflowers, called the Jerusalem artichoke or sunchoke, have an edible tuberous root. The flowers grow up to 10 feet tall in the early autumn and attract goldfinches to the small, high-protein seeds. 6. Edamame. Yes, this healthy snack food is easy to grow directly from seed in your own garden. The plants germinate quickly and grow to about 2 feet, and they stay an attractive bushy green while the hairy little seed pods develop. You can buy frozen edamame in the supermarket, but why not just grow them yourself? It's time to harvest the pods when they are plump and still green. All you do then is steam or boil them for 5 minutes to break down an enzyme that otherwise makes them indigestible. And then drain and serve with soy sauce or some wasabi paste for firepower. Edamame are legumes, immature soybeans. Whatever you do not eat is great to till back into the garden for green manure. Or you can feed the stalks and leaves to the chickens. 7. Potatoes. Sure, potatoes can be wiped out by disease or stunted from marginal growing conditions, but they can also do tremendously well in the garden and produce many pounds of food for each pound of seed potatoes you buy. And homegrown potatoes boast a rich, earthy flavor that is mostly missing from store-bought potatoes. Potatoes favor deeply worked, slightly acid soil, cool temperatures for spring or fall sowing, and moderate rainfall. Buy certified seed potatoes that can best resist pests and diseases. Plant the sprouting eyes about 5 inches deep and 1 foot apart, and harvest when the leaves wilt. Do not wash the potatoes for storing. Just dry them and knock off the dirt. Then store them in a cool, dark space. From the Triangle Gardener magazine, this is by Mark Wethington. Plant Focus. Gorgeous gingers. Few plants can bring a taste of the tropics to temperate gardens quite like ginger lilies or hedetium. While they are neither true lilies, lilium, or gingers, zingiber, they are outstanding garden plants in the warm south. Hailing mostly from Southeast Asia, the genus is comprised of around 80 different species, although plant breeding over the past 30 years has led to many hundreds of selections. The scientific name translates roughly to sweet snow, a reference to the delightfully fragrant flowers of the white butterfly ginger, a ubiquitous pass-along plant throughout the South. Ginger lilies are prized here for their blooms in summer into early fall, when many other plants have succumbed to the high temperatures and have stopped flowering. While some ginger lilies from more tropical regions will not survive a central North Carolina winter, there are many species and selections that thrive here. They are quite distinct in the landscape, where the upright stems, or to be botanically correct, pseudo stems, arise from thickened roots called rhizomes. Strappy leaves cloak the entire length of the pseudo stems, and many a new gardener has asked, why would you grow corn in the garden? There is little chance of confusing a hedetium with corn since it begins flowering in summer or early fall. Terminal pine cone flower spikes open to reveal fragrant flowers, at least in most species, in shades of red, pink, orange, yellow, and white. Ginger lilies are easy to grow, appreciating rich, moist, and well-draining soil. They will tolerate drier conditions, but flowering is reduced, and plants often have yellow tinge to the foliage in sunny, dry spots. With adequate moisture, ginger lilies will be fine in full sun, but are often at their best when they have some protection during the hottest and driest part of the day. As an added bonus, they are quite deer and vole resistant and can be a great addition along the edge of a woodland. Most of the hardy forms are wonderful garden denizens with a dramatic presence and very showy flowers. The underground rhizomes can spread to form sizable patches, which can be allowed to continue to spread or dug, divided, replanted, and shared with friends. Because of this growth, growing these in containers is not advisable. They can quickly overwhelm the pot, sometimes even splitting all but the most sturdy ones. Division is best in spring after the new growth has started through midsummer. Make sure to leave several of the pointed buds at the end of rhizomes to ensure a quick and successful recovery. There are quite a few ginger lilies available, especially from mail-order nurseries. Their quick growth and large root systems mean they can rapidly outgrow a nursery container and so are sometimes hard to maintain in a traditional nursery or garden center. Most people are first introduced to the genus when a gardening friend passes on a division of the gloriously fragrant white butterfly ginger lily, H. coronarium. A favorite at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum is a hybrid with the butterfly ginger lily called White Starburst, whose stems grow to 6 feet tall and are topped, starting in September, by white flowers with a soft yellow throat. Other great hardy ginger lilies include the 5 feet tall Pink Princess with fragrant pink flowers. Stephen, a dwarf form of H. densiflorum, grows only to about 4 feet tall with very narrow leaves and tight spikes of orange-yellow flowers beginning in July. We grow a few gingers as much for their foliage as for the flowers. Dr. Moy, named for a ginger lily breeder, has foliage flecked with white, especially early in the season. Late summer brings on luscious flower heads of soft peach. A species we like with gorgeous foliage is H. greenii. This species is not always the most hardy, but some selections are fine in central North Carolina. Green's ginger lily has large green leaves with red backs for a dramatic display. It would be worth growing even if it did not have bright orange-red flowers. An unusual feature of this plant is that it will form plantlets at the base of its leaves, which can be removed and potted up to share or keep inside as insurance over the winter. And some events coming up. Perennial vegetables, plant once, reap twice, or more. August the 17th, 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Perennial vegetables are not fruits. The part you eat is the flower bud, artichoke, the spring shoot, asparagus, Solomon seal, the fiddlehead, ostrich fern, the leaf stalk, rhubarb, cardoon, lovage, the leaf, lovage, Burbank spineless cactus, or the root, sunchokes, ramps, giant Solomon seal, groundnuts. Learn how these crops can be grown in the Carolinas. There is a fee and you need to pre-register. It will happen at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum in Raleigh. Call 919-515-3132. 919-515-3132. And family vermicomposting, August 17th from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Learn all about how red wiggler worms can recycle your leftover food into soil. One lucky family will win a new worm bin, minus the worms. Registration is per family, and the program is most appropriate for families with children elementary aged or older. Registration barcode is number 236854. This is at Walnut Creek Wetland in Raleigh. You can go to their website at raleighnc.gov. And cool season vegetables, fewer pests, less work. August 17th at 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The conditions for gardening will all improve after Labor Day. The weather cools off. Many weeds are going dormant. Most bugs and diseases have run their course. Learn how to grow the greens, crucifers, and root crops that thrive in the cool half of the year. There is a fee, and you need to pre-register. This will happen at J.C. Ralston Arboretum in Raleigh. For more information, call 919-515-3132. 919-515-3132. And Conservation Gardening 101, Landscaping with Native Plants Series, August the 20th and 27th and September 3rd, 10, 17, 24, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., a class designed to provide home gardeners and emerging landscape professionals with foundational concepts of landscape design, species selection, implementation and maintenance of native plant gardens based on conservation principles. There is a fee, and pre-registration is required. This happens at North Carolina Botanical Garden in Chapel Hill. Go to the website ncbg.unc.edu. And now, from Jerry Baker's Terrific Garden Tonics, a super shrub restorer. This mixture is just the ticket for perking up old shrubs and starting them on their way to a robust new life. The ingredients: 1 can of beer, 1 cup of ammonia, 1/2 cup of dishwashing liquid, 1/2 cup of molasses or clear corn syrup. Here's your instructions. Mix these ingredients in a 20-gallon hose-end sprayer and drench your shrubs thoroughly each spring, including the undersides of leaves. They'll bounce back with lots of fresh new growth to thank you. And a new life for old shrubs. Do not put up with that ugly old shrub. Give it a new lease on life with new renewal pruning. Every year, for 3 years running, cut out one-third of the branches close to the ground. By the second spring, you'll already see lots of new growth eager for the room you're about to create with your pruning saw. By the third and final rejuvenation pruning, you will be taking out the last of the old wood, and your vigorous new shrub will look lush and flower better than ever. Keep them clean. When pruning, sterilize your tools before moving from one tree or shrub to another, especially if any of them shows signs of disease. Use a mixture of one part rubbing alcohol or chlorine bleach to 9 parts of water. Soak the tools for several minutes before wiping them dry and moving on. Terrific time savers. Got so many coffee cans you don't know what to do with them? Hide them behind your shrubs to hold dead flowers as you pluck off and weeds you pull up during your morning strolls around your yard. And an all-purpose perennial fertilizer. Tired of planting the same old annuals year after year? Then it's time to give perennials a try. Set them out once to enjoy many seasons of beautiful blooms. Whether you're setting out new plants or feeding established clumps, this power-picked, packed mix will keep perennials in the pink. Ingredients: 3 parts bone meal, 3 parts green sand or wood ashes, and 1 part blood meal. Instructions: mix these ingredients in a bucket or in a wheelbarrow. Apply 3 to 5 pounds of the mix per 100 square feet of new perennial garden bed before planting and work it into the soil. Or scatter 2 tablespoons around each clump of established perennials in spring and scratch it in lightly into the soil with a hand fork. And don't wait for the wilt. If you wait until your plants are wilting before you water, it's almost too late. You're better off checking the soil instead. Pull back the mulch in a small area. Dig down a few inches with a trowel. If the top 2 inches are dry, get out the hose and get busy watering. Question: I've heard it's possible for some plants to get too much sun. Is it true? Answer: it sure is. Sunburn shows up as tan, bronzed, or scorched-looking patches on leaves or flowers. To prevent, expose indoor-grown plants to sunshine gradually over a week or two. If you see these symptoms on plants in the garden, give them a long, cool drink right away and move them to a shadier spot.